Welcome to the Diverse Economies podcast. I'm your host, Arushi Dahia, and I'm so happy you could join us today. Hello, everybody. Today, we are joined by Dr. Charu Sheela, who is a professor at the School of Interdisciplinary Arts and Sciences at the University of Washington, Bothell. She received her doctorate in economics from the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and her courses today focus on gender, development, and globalization. She served as the editor of Rethinking Marxism from 2009 to 2013 and has worked as an active member of its editorial board. She has served two terms as an elected member of the governing board of the Cultural Studies Association US and twice served as an elected board member for the International Association for Feminist Economics. Dr. Charu Sheela, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Arushi.
Could we begin by having you tell us a little more about the concept of economic subjectivity? Why must you think about identities in economics?
So economic subjectivity is a concept that I'm going to address this in three bits. First, I'll talk a little bit more about the concept in parts or two ways. And then I'll end by talking about why youth should pay attention. So if you look at the idea of economic subjectivity, the first thing to realize is that this is not meant to be a description of every element of subjectivity, by which we mean the ways in which people think of themselves and engage socially, materially, culturally with the world around them. But we are focused more on a very large aspect of it, which is economic. And since the ways in which human beings engage the world in order to access resources, in order to engage in daily life, work, production, to provision for themselves and their families, look to the future. Since this is a very, very large aspect of our life, it's very important to look at economic subjectivity because it is really that aspect of our life that shapes our interactions with people who are close to us, but also the impacts of our actions on people who are very far from us, whom we may never see because of the ways in which we engage in, for example, consumption, or the way in which we make decisions about support for migrants, or the ways in which we stand up for civil rights and economic equity. So these are very many ways in which thinking through economic subjectivity, which is the idea that depending on where you are born, what identities you bear into the world, which countries you were born in, the ways in which you manage to access resources, enable provisioning, and the kind of footprint you leave on the world depends on that. So when I think of why economic subjectivity matters or why identity matters for economics, I think that identity matters both as a way to think of what enables people to access provisioning, what prevents people from flourishing well, but it also matters because the cultural practices and institutions we are born with also carry with them not just deficits, but they carry with them knowledges and privileges that we can use to make the world better. So in terms of the youth today, I would say that compared to previous generations, the youth today have a much sharper appreciation and understanding that the ways in which people access resources really matters. It matters for equity. It matters to make sure that we all live safe, strong, happy lives. And above all, it also matters for the future. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, economists didn't really think about the environment. We just thought about if there is a problem, we will just have more growth. And the more we grow, then we'll handle equity that way. We don't have to worry about how people access things. All we have to do is to make more stuff and then everything will be fine. Now we know we can't grow our way out of our problems because of the ecological crisis and because we have seen that growth does not end up actually being shared prosperity, that we have seen tremendous amount of growth, but that has not resulted in people enjoying better lives across the globe. And so for those two reasons, I think that the youth today have to worry about this, and they have to think about the role of subjectivity and identity in economics, because that's really going to mean that we will be able to have better solutions for the problems we face, which is going to be essential. My generation definitely didn't create adequate solutions, at least in my field of economics, to the point where we really do need some new models. And that is what the youth will provide.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with what you were saying in terms of identity reflecting the ways in which people can access equity. And I think today you see some of the biggest disparities in terms of income. And some might argue this is the biggest difference you can see from the rich to the poor in maybe the history of mankind. And this is a bit of a tangent, but for a long time you served as the chief editor at the academic journal Rethinking Marxism. I'd love to learn a little more about Rethinking Marxism, and could you share a little more about this journal?
Absolutely. As it happens, it's not a tangent at all. Rethinking Marxism emerged actually as a result of work done by the students of Stephen Resnick, Richard Wolff, and Julie Graham, Kath Gibson, J.K. Gibson-Graham. And they formed first the Association for Economic and Social Analysis, also known as AESA, Association for Economic and Social Analysis, and put out the journal Rethinking Marxism. It emerged at University of Massachusetts Amherst because a core of students were really interested in ways in which we could take the radical promise of Marxism's critical theory, but look at the world through that critical lens, but not simply as a sort of blind application of some top-down bureaucratic Communist Party laws, but more how you could make it a living, vibrant effort of democratic decision-making that looked at multiple forms of subjectivity and identity. So class, yes, but also race, also gender, also development, also sort of historical questions of social exploitation, labor exploitation, and integrate questions of the environment. So in that sense, from the outset, the journal emerged from these conversations that were taking place, not just at UMass Amherst Economics Department, but in many parts of the world, where we were becoming more and more aware that there were issues and that older approach, which thought that you could just solve problems by a technological fix or just by a simple kind of political overthrow without really considering long-term institutions and mechanisms by which we interact differently with each other and nature. So a lot of us were beginning to realize that the old solutions were inadequate, and many of them were making the world worse. And so Rethinking Marxism from the outset really set out to place that promise of a different world being possible, to try and think it through more carefully and politically, but to also always be interdisciplinary. So that's why it's at the Association for Economic and Social Analysis. And so we've always published, and we've always known that knowledge emerges in multiple forms. So in addition to publishing academic work that takes the form of scholarly journal articles, we have multiple academic genres. We recognize that art is an academic genre, and aesthetics is an academic genre, just like this podcast in its own way is an academic genre. It's a way in which we gather our ideas, share our views, expand our knowledge base, and reach multiple audiences. So we've done art, we've done poetry, scholarly journals. One of the features I have always been very fond of is a segment called Remarks, R-E-M-A-R-X, Remarks. And it is for shorter pieces. They are still scholarly and they are still peer-reviewed. But it's for shorter pieces that have a tight focus on, say, a particular issue that's happening in the world at the moment, a reflection on, say, a cultural phenomenon. So we've done stuff, everything from looking at Fukuyama to looking at movies in that segment. And it's been a really delightful place for multiple conversations to happen. So the journal is, the association is now, I believe, almost 40 years old. So we have been there for a very long time. And it is one of my fondest projects, not just me alone, but the collectivity of people who've been involved in it has been phenomenal and has been intellectually sustaining for me. So thank you for asking about that.
Excellent. I think that's so valuable because in our undergraduate courses, we learn about Marx's, like you said, radical promise of a revolution. And it's very hard to conceive of how his ideas would translate into the world we live in now because we did not see that dramatic revolution. And so this idea of having democratic decision makers extending beyond these confines of class, which has been Marxism's point of interaction to include race and to include gender and development and all these historical contexts which matter in terms of how we analyze issues today, is really, really, like I said, something very valuable. And I'm excited to learn about Rethinking Marxism and how it gathers and shares ideas, like you mentioned. So thank you so much for sharing about it. And coming to your involvement with the DICE Collective, you are a member of the DICE Collective, and what does it mean for you to be a part of something like DICE?
So first, I want to extend my deep, deep thanks to Caroline Shemaz Hussain. Dr. Hussain invited me to join DICE, and this group to me is a group that from a related but different angle has been working on the types of questions that Association for Economic and Social Analysis has been working on. In particular, one major project that emerged out of the work of J.K. Gibson Graham, who were who are senior members, part of the founding of this journal, Julie Graham and Kathy Gibson, when they co-author, Julie alas is no more with us, but when they co-authored, would write under the title J.K. Gibson Graham, because it was a joint project and the sort of authorship was fused authorship. So that is an example of a naming practice that recognizes an economic subjectivity, which is a joint labor, for example, that when they worked together, a real collective voice emerged. So they were part of the Community Economies Research Network, which they founded. And I know that Hussain has worked with the ERN, but CERN has focused more on the community economies in terms of the rise of alternate economies. A lovely book by Gibson Graham et al. Is called Take Back the Economy. It's a book that has been written for ordinary everyday people to learn about the economy and what you can do to get this radical promise for social transformation in all kinds of ways, just where you are in your daily life. Everything from cooperatives to local finance, to shared labor agreements, to gift exchanges, to mutual aid. And so, you know, the Community Economies Research Network, I was already familiar with, and then Caroline Shemaz Hussain, Dr. Hussain introduced me to DICE, and I was very, very delighted to encounter a group of people who have been working in tandem on similar kinds of questions, but with a very particular focus on the issues of diversity and what the sort of Black social economy, minority social economy looks like. So that sort of attentiveness to questions of difference, diversity, and race, I thought as an anchor was really crucial. Not that it's missing elsewhere, but when you make it a central focus, at least for the kind of work I do, because I do work on the developing world and I do work on the third world. And my first co-edited volume with Iman Zainalabdin was Postcolonialism Meets Economics. So my interest in economic subjectivity and postcoloniality has always been driven by this question of why and how we still live in the aftermath of slavery, of colonialism, and of racism. And so this for me was a really important group to be part of. So in terms of my membership in DICE, I would say I have learned more than I have contributed. I am excited to be part of this project. And I'm only now moving in with the help of Professor Hussein into a very specific project, two projects that I'm interested in working on, which is the general idea of what I call solidarity across difference. There's a lot of focus around actions inside particular minority community, the Black social economy, the working class social economy, the LGBTQ community, the Asian diaspora. Or else when we think of race, we think of our relationship to the dominant community, to the white community, to whatever. I am really interested in minority to minority solidarity. Is there a way in which we can promote solidarity across our own differences and support each other? And I've become really interested in that aspect of the solidarity economy. And thus, my future contributions to DICE would be to look at that more carefully. But at this moment, I just really have to say, I am really delighted Dr. Hussain invited me to join this community. And the social and solidarity economy movement is large, it's global, it is very clear that this is the direction we're going to have to take if we want to address the issues that I talked about at the start of this podcast. So there's no other solution. There is no shortcut to these things. You can't just grow your way out of the problems. We're going to have to learn to show solidarity with each other. And we're going to have to learn to work with each other. And to me, that is the promise of this particular group.
Thank you for sharing that. I loved how you ended with the note of solidarity, because I think that is a lot of what DICE stands for. And I'm glad that you've been able to find this community. To end with, I want to know if you have any final messages for the youth that are looking to learn more about this field. I know we've had a very fruitful conversation and I've learned a lot for sure. So if there's any final message you'd like to leave the youth with.
Yes, it used to be that when I would talk to youth, I would focus on educational pathways because I'm an educator, I'm a professor, that's what I know, that's what I do. But over the years, I've come to realize that the academy is an important path, but it is only one path. And so my message to youth would be, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, find something that can sustain your interest and, you know, earn a living. As Joan Robinson said, the only thing worse than being exploited under capitalism is not being exploited under capitalism, which means only thing worse than having a terrible job is being unemployed. So I don't want to diminish the importance of education, employment. But I think at the same time, a healthy work-life balance, a capacity for finding small daily ways of showing solidarity in the communities you live in is where I think youth as a whole can go. Some of you will definitely stay in academia. Some of you will move into other fields, future entrepreneurs, future bankers, future artists. But wherever you are, I think it's really important that you stay connected with these social movements. You cannot make change as an individual. This is something I have learned over the years, especially in the narratives we tell ourselves. There is very much the heroic narrative of the lone ranger showing up in town all by themselves and cleaning up everything. It is a masculine dominant narrative of the great hero. So all of us, when we have our imaginations of what we do, we often think of how, in I terms, not in solidarity terms, we often think of what we will do to clean things up at a very individual level. And I think that that is something I would urge the youth to rethink, that part of reading about solidarity is not enough. You have to practice solidarity. And to practice it, it means working with others, alongside others, and sort of being willing to hold space for other people's voices, other people's needs, other people's leadership. So that is where I would end, that, you know, you never stop learning. That sounds trite, but it is true. But it's also true that you never stop learning, because it's not just book learning. It's also a learning by practice, a learning by doing. And that, I think, is where solidarity resides today.
Thank you so, so much for sharing that. It was incredibly inspiring, and I appreciate your message, and I know it resonates with a lot of us. And thank you once again.
It was my pleasure.
You just heard from Dr. Charashila, who had some very valuable and critical insights on economic subjectivity and the importance of solidarity. As always, send us any thoughts or questions you might have on @AfricanaEconomies on Instagram and Facebook, and @AfricanaEconomy on Twitter. The Diverse Economies podcast is run by students for students and made possible due to funding from the Canadian Research Chair for Africana Development and Feminist Political Economics at the University of Toronto, Scarborough. I'm gonna go to bed.